Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. I'm so excited for you to hear today's episode where we dive into how we can use what we're going through in our lives to completely transform ourselves, to stay more centered, to dive deeper into alignment and integrity. And this guy I've had on the podcast before, he's incredible. His name is Josh Trent. He's the host of the Wellness and Wisdom Podcast. And we really dive in because he's so self-reflective and he's able to systemize his transformations. He really walks us through, how do you navigate emotional regulation? How do you use something like parenthood or whatever it might be for you to actually step more fully into yourself, step into your power? And what about healing relationships? You know, being in what seem like upper limits, like you hit the upper limit of a relationship, a container. And this is where we really end up asking that question, should I stay or go? And what does it mean to navigate that space of uncertainty and actually fall more deeply in love? And what does that require of you as the individual who composes part of that relationship? And what's the invitation in terms of healing? And of course, this all connects to actually the ability to be more present. What does healing mean? What does it mean to be a leader, to have conscious leadership? And not just within your relationship, but also within business, within your workplace, within your family, within your culture, whatever that might be. So we're going to head into all of that. And before we do, wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure you hit the subscribe button. One, because it helps support the show. It's like a free way that you can help do that. And two, the benefit is you don't miss any upcoming episodes. So with all that said, let's go. Here's Josh Trent. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I have returning guest Josh Trent. How do I refer to you now? You're like podcaster extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Father.
Yeah.
Since the last time I had you on, I don't think you were a dad.
No.
Now you're a double dad.
Double dad. I think she was pregnant. I think Carrie Michelle
I think
was pregnant.
So, yeah. Yeah. And oh my God, you've gone through quite a... You moved? I don't think you were in Austin at the time.
No. Oh, we just moved here. So it was like 3 years ago, dude. 3 or 4 years ago.
Isn't that wild?
It's been a minute.
So much transformation since then.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, that's why I'm so excited to have you back on, because in 3 years, especially with two kids, a lot changes. And we've been through a lot in the time since the last, because I think the last one I was in Calgary doing the interview with you.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, times have shifted dramatically.
No doubt.
So let's just start here. This is probably a big question, but let's start big. What is the number one thing you've learned in the last 3 years?
Wow. Okay.
That's hard to pick, probably.
Paint me against the wall. The number one thing in the last 3 years is learning about how capable I really am, how much I can hold, and then the work to be able to do that. Like the work to be able to actually hold two children, a business, my company, the podcast, my own spiritual growth, my own physical practices. If you would have told me 3-4 years ago, like, hey, did you know that in 3-4 years you'll be holding this much? I would have been like, that'll break my back.
Yeah.
But now I'm just really grateful for it. I mean, it's so powerful to be able to like truly be responsible for other people and to know that like I trust myself to do that. Because I don't think 3 years ago I did. I was still dealing with some porn addiction and just some very deleterious health practices back then. Like, it was bad, dude.
What were your health practices?
The health practices was like my... So when Carrie Michelle got pregnant, and this is something about physiology that I learned, our testosterone drops when our women are pregnant. And when my testosterone dropped and you add in sleep disturbance, it's like a Molotov cocktail for just gaining weight. So I ballooned up to like 240... I wasn't feeling good in my body. I was going through just still kind of lingering addiction with pornography back then. And so now I can look back on that and go, okay, I didn't learn anything new. I just let go of a bunch of crap that I thought was the way to deal with my emotions, but it actually was completely not self-serving at all. It felt self-serving in the moment, you know, but it wasn't self-serving at all, because I was wearing on the outside of my body what on the inside wasn't being at peace, wasn't actually being served with peace. And it was a very deep hole, which actually I'm going to say thank you, man. Like, there was many calls that you helped me on in regards to my response ableness. And it was just really a freaking hero's journey in the past 3 years. But here we are, you know. I mean, I have the new studio. Everything's great. The relationship is finally breathing new oxygen again. Yeah. I'm no longer struggling with any kind of porn addiction or sex addiction, and just feels really good.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to this lawyer years ago, man, like probably 10 years ago, maybe more, maybe 12. And I remember her saying to me, it was like back when I drank, it was at a bar. And she was friends with a friend of mine, and she was a divorce attorney. And I said to her, what is the like the top insight that you have as a divorce attorney? And she said that no one should get divorced when their kids are under 5. And I was like, why? And she said, because everyone should get divorced when their kids are under 5. Yeah. And I was like, that's a really interesting.
That's so good.
Right? Like, oh, yeah. I didn't understand it really till I had a kid, in that I was like, oh, these are all just different thresholds. Like, again, if someone gets divorced when their kids are under 5, and that's if it happens, it's the right choice. But I'm like, it's really interesting if two people, both people in the relationship, are willing to use the strain that the child is inevitably bringing.
Yeah.
Inevitably.
Yeah.
Because you're, as you said, like your capacity pre-child, you don't even know your capacity.
You don't even know you don't know.
Right. And so it's like, I always think of that saying that you only get handled what you can handle. Mm. But you have to stretch to hold it. And so like you said, if you asked 3 years ago, hey, you're going to have a bigger business. You're going to have to provide on a higher level. You're going to build a epic podcast studio that's going to stretch, like, again, the what your land holds.
Yeah.
Your nervous system capacity. You're going to have 2 kids. Like, damn, under, your eldest is 3, right?
3 and 1.5, yeah.
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 Like, it's, I just look now and I'm like, oh, what a gift my son provides in so many ways, but especially relationally. I'm like, I look at my wife and I'm like, wow, we get to do this. Like, and we get to like learn through the gift that is our child, which like you look at your kid, and I'm curious when you look at your kids, I look at mine and I'm like, wow, like I can't believe I made you.
Yeah.
I mean, I participated.
Right.
I was the key that unlocked the door, but Kai
you dropped
was the
seed,
factory.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. God, yeah. When I look in Nova's eyes, people ask me this question a lot, like, what's it like being a father? Which is a great question. And when I look in Nova's eyes and when I look in Naya's eyes, it's like there's a part of my heart, imagine my heart would be a cave, and it's like a rock hound chipped out an entire piece of this cave with diamonds in it that I never even knew existed. Mm. Mm. Like a
discovery that you didn't even know.
Talk about not even knowing what I didn't know.
Yeah.
I never knew that that type of love could be felt or palpable. You know, intimacy love and lustful love and sexual love and relational love is great.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. 100%. It's transformative. But a love to a daughter and a son, I mean, it just makes me exhale because there's no love that could ever touch it. It's its own lane of love. It's its own essence of love. And what it's teaching me every time I look into their eyes is, am I actually here? Mm. Am I really here? We hear about presence, right? Air quotes. But like, they teach me presence. Because when my son wants to play, that is the only thing that's important.
Oh,
there's nothing
gosh,
else that matters in the world. It's like, Daddy, we're going to go play in the pool. It's like, that's what we're doing. And so leave the phone aside. Like, it's just this constant shedding, almost like a snake skin, of my either attention presence or my attention deficit. Mm. And it's so powerful because I've had moments with my son where I have flashbacks of moments with me and my father where he's not present with me or he's yelling at me. And there have been times that break my heart where I would yell at Nova or I would yell at Naya when I'm like super sleep deprived and triggered, AKA liberation is through the nervous system and being regulated. And so I learned so much from them, and it's only been 3 years. I can only imagine in 3 more years, 9 years, 12 years, what are we going to learn from our children when they're teenagers? And what does that road even look like? Can you imagine the kind of man that I and you and all fathers will become? It's so insanely transformative, but it takes real humility because I have to be able to see where I'm not stepping up. I have to really take ownership. And that's painful, dude. It's painful when your woman's like, hey, I love you, and there's certain categories you're not fulfilling.
Yeah, it's the gift of love, right? It's like if we're willing to see relationship as a reflection to possibility. And also, you know, the other day I was thinking about this of like, I couldn't imagine not being in my son's life. Like, I don't know. Now I have this different lens where I'm like, there are fathers who literally have no clue where their kid is.
Yeah.
And while I understand the sort of potential inherited trauma and the contextual circumstantial things that can create that, it's like, I don't know how, if you're a parent, that you can, I would imagine you'd have to become on some level sociopathic or narcissistic to actually disconnect from the part of you that knows that there's a child that needs you. Even it might be a reflection of the pain of someone not being there for you, and that's what's causing the recreation of the pattern of abandonment. But that pain that's being activated, again, it's like we never want to become like our parent, and then we become like our parent. And I'm like, what a gift that can be, to be like, as you said, it activates in you something. It can. It is an invitation to activate in you something different. And I think the love of a niece or a nephew or a best friend's child can really activate a similar thing for the people who can't have children. You know, God bless that experience.
Yeah.
But it's like, I look at my son and I'm like, man, like, what a motivation to become, like, not just say, oh, this is what I stand for, but like, what did I actually stand for? Like, what did my choices, how did I treat his mother? Like, all that stuff that I'm like, what an incredible responsibility. Like, when you hear about men who have affairs and have daughters, which again, like, no judgment to the, like, past that people choose to awaken, but I'm like, you want your daughter to choose good men, and then you're not a good man, and vice versa. You want your son to choose good woman or a good man, whatever, that you're like able to recognize that you actually have a direct impact on that, you know?
But they're sort of wrapped up in their own, I guess you would call it awakening process. I would call it disassociation.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, I'm just being gentle with
or
the ignorant. Word.
You're padding the words nice. But it's really like, wow, you know, I can speak to this from personal experience. My father, Dan, he's never met Nova. He's never met Carrie Michelle. He's never met Naya.
He's never met anyone in your family.
Never. And does
he live?
Doesn't ask about them.
Does he live on the West Coast?
He lives on the West Coast. Yeah, he's in Northern Cal, Washington, Oregon area.
And he's never expressed a desire to meet your wife or your kids.
Yeah, and so I've gone to the well, like breath work, plant medicine, microdosing, therapy, EMDR, praying to God in the sauna space, like you name it. Like I've been there, and what I've learned from this at 44, and it's taken, by the way, since that time we first podcasted all the way up till now for me to really come to grips with, our fathers are who they are.
Yeah.
They are who they are. And they're such, even if you look at the Hawkins scale, right? I can't just be in grief forever.
No.
I have to go to anger. Then I get to go to acceptance. Then I have the courage to change and see a different viewpoint from compassion. But I've gone through that and I didn't skip it. I tried to skip it. I tried to skip the emotional ladder. And all it did was just make me angry and make me lash out and make me project onto Carrie Michelle, which I've learned now that a lot of my father wound actually is what I project onto her. Mm. And so it's been really interesting because this abandonment wound in which you speak, I mean, I chose my mother and father, specifically my dad, primarily to learn about abandonment, to understand that no matter what happens with my father being in my life or out of my life, I am the one that controls if I'm safe or not. Yeah. If he's in my life,
and or what you make it mean,
or what I make it mean, I'm a freaking meaning making machine, bro. I don't know about you.
Yeah. No, not me. I'm good.
But so now I recently had a conversation with him and I was just like, hey, I'm just wondering where you've been. Mm. And he's like, what do you mean? And I got down to it after a few ways where he tried to dodge the question. And I'm like, where have you been? You don't ask about your son. You don't ask about, you don't ask about me. You don't ask about your grandchildren or Carrie Michelle. What is it? And he said, oh, well, I cracked his vase a little bit and a little piece of light came out. And he said, I was sick of being beat up from you for years. So I just thought I'd pull back. And I said, wow, why did it take you this long to tell me? I'm like, whatever it is, I'm sorry. Do you want to talk about it? And he's like, well, that's for another day. Mm. And so the little boy in me is like, hey, let's just heal it now. Look what I do for a living. I mean, look what the stuff you and I talk about. It's like, I want to get to the healing as quickly as possible. But not everybody's at that speed. Not everybody's at that cadence. And especially that generation, you know, my dad's 70. I have to learn to love people exactly where they are, without bypassing it, without pretending like I'm accepting where they are, and actually just accept where he is.
Yeah.
And that is the fucking antidote to the abandonment wound. I mean, really, like, just letting him be who he is, telling him my truth and being like, hey, this hurts. If you want to be in my life, let's make it look like this. Let's hash it out. Let's figure it out. Let's have a clean slate. But not everybody's willing to do that, you know? And so does it still hurt to even share? Of course.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to have their father?
Who wouldn't want the answer to be, let's hash it. I'd love to explain to you my and hear your pain for me not showing up.
Hey.
Your whole life. As you know, it's interesting that he takes, which is so classic. It's like you're asking him where he's been, and then he takes it and flips it and makes the responsibility his feelings now, which is brilliant, great defensiveness. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, what a flip. And so it's like if we don't hold it, like if all of a sudden we go, oh, yeah, I could see how my criticism of you showing up
I can
or
see
not
some truth in what
as
you're
a
saying.
Father. Yeah. And then be like, and how do we reconcile that? Like, has he ever apologized for not?
Never.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a. Yeah.
But there's a paradox, right? Because in order, like, look at the way that you went through your relationship challenges, like the cheating and the ambivalence and even recently with your book and Kylie, like you had to go through a journey of blood, sweat, and tears in order for you to be able to share from a place of experience. That's why people trust you, because you have the experience. So I have to go through the experience of having a deep father wound and an abandonment wound with my father so that I can know what that feels like and not give that to Nova or Naya. That's the whole point. If I didn't know what it felt like, and I had no idea, I would be unconsciously incompetent and I would pass it on to them, as Alan Watts says, all wretch and no vomit. We just raise our kids to raise their kids to raise their kids the same way. So it's not easy, man, but it's so fucking worth it. It's so worth it to just be like, all right, I have the courage to actually say what it is my heart wants to say, and I have the balls to accept whatever I receive. That's the work. I mean, that's the real work. And it's still unfolding, by the way. I still see some pain in me, and I still see some projection with Carrie Michelle, and I notice when I'm short-tempered with my children, and it breaks my heart, dude. It really does. Like, it breaks my fucking heart that I'm like that. And so now it's like, instead of going into the shame spiral about my behavior, it's more just, can I recognize what I did? Can I make amends? Can I have some kind of repair and resolve? And can I just continue to commit to the work? Because it never stops.
No, it doesn't.
The work doesn't stop. It I don't feel like it ever does. And I'm talking like people that are in their 70s and 80s that are masters, and they're still probably dealing with their stuff too.
Yeah, still exploring their relationship stuff. You know, which I think that's the, you like know or meet the people who are sort of spiritual masters or relational masters or psychological, like in the, I think they're all different versions of the same realms, but it's like, they have relationship challenges. Of course they do, because everybody does. Because I think it's like, it's no matter how good you get, you can always get better.
Okay, you know I'm an absolute super fan of Cozy Earth. And so I got to tell you about the Nantucket Towels. Because whether you're looking for a gift for a loved one or you want to spruce up your home, and let's talk about how a nice towel caresses the skin. These towels are a straight home run. To be fair, you do want people to leave your house, but they might want to stay a little longer because this wraps you in a big old hug. They're the perfect balance of softness and absorbency, which is so important, which adds just a nice touch of luxury to the daily routine, right? Not only do Kai and I love these towels for ourselves, but we wrap our little boy Jasper in them when he gets out of the bath. It's gentle on the skin and it keeps you so cozy and warm, I mean, pun intended. And it's perfect for everyone in the family. And it's such a nice treat for guests. So these towels are practical, they're sustainable, and they are luxurious. And they're made from an eco-friendly blend of cotton and bamboo viscose. And it has a unique rice weave construction that provides its quick drying capability. So wrap yourself and your family in love and warmth with these wonderful Nantucket towels. Just head over to CozyEarth.com and use Mark at checkout to take advantage of Cozy Earth's generous 40% off to our listeners. That's 40% off all their products, from loungewear to luxurious sheets, socks, and more. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK for 40% off.
And like relationship mastery, which I think is so correlated. Well, one, it's incredibly correlated, obviously, to well-being. like to health.
Yeah.
But it's correlated to like your physiological health, because if you don't feel like you have access to a yes and no, to your boundaries, to compassion, then you won't feel safe. And if you don't feel safe and you feel like resentful and that your partner determines everything and you're just like a cog in a wheel out of business, then your body is going to respond exactly that way. Like, oh, you're in here as a spirit, but you're not in charge. Like, you put me in situations and circumstances that, like, you throw me under the fucking bus. And I think, like, when Kylie and I got back together, I remember I was doing this somatic therapy session. And the somatic therapist, I was saying to her, I forget what sort of threshold of my nervous system we were getting to, but it was this recognition, like, that I didn't trust Kylie. Because Kylie would say to me in our first relationship, like, I choose you, and da da da. But she didn't. And I said to the therapist, oh, like, I had these boundaries, like, if you don't, then this, you know? And she said, yeah, but you had them, but you stayed. Mm. So, like, you had psychological thoughts about a boundary, but then you left yourself there. And I remember just crying because I had this, like, deep recognition that I left myself in circumstances that were unsafe. Now, that was true in relationally, that just like, here I am with someone who can't fully choose this, and I'm talking about, hey, you need to fully choose this, but then when she doesn't, I stay. So like, that message to myself is, you don't really mean it. Mm. So you're not someone who means something you say, and if we ever need you to say something, you won't mean it. So like, I can't trust you. So inherently, my inflammatory process went up, and my testosterone for sure dropped, and my weight went up because I couldn't trust myself.
Yeah.
And so like, what do you do when you can't trust yourself? You're in your own body. You need to numb yourself and disassociate. So then, you know, at the time I would, you know, pursue like a gummy or something that just like,
yeah. Take the edge off.
Yeah. When I'm like, oh fuck, I need the edge. 'Cause the edge is actually what's saying, hey, come back. Like, get back. And so that somatic therapy session was so profound because I then cleared with Kai, like, oh, this is like mine too. Like, I left myself in this. And then I told the story when we were breaking up, before we broke up. The story I had was like, she can't show up. Mm. I was like, oh, I'm staying in circumstances where someone can't show up. That means I'm consenting, which was a similar experience that I had to exploring that collectively with Instagram. Like, I'm in this relationship with a platform that I don't know how to access choice at the time, which now I can feel that that's developing. But it's like I was consenting to being in a dynamic that I felt powerless and abused by. What the fuck? Like, I'm not a victim. I'm consenting to this. Mm. So it's like it's interesting to see the impact that has then, because what correlated with the access to that choice and the access to trusting myself was then access to choice around nutrition. And, you know, I spent my whole life, I've never said this, but, like, it's something I'm becoming more aware of. I spent my whole life chasing being lean. And I would get it, and then I'd lose it. And then I'd get it, and then I'd lose it. Mm. And it was, like, almost necessary that I always had to be in pursuit of it, because it was like money and like love. I didn't know how to hold it, and I didn't think I deserved to, because who was I without the wound? Who was I without the, like, oh, I got to lose another 10 pounds again? And, like, now for the first time in my life, I've been the same way for, like, a year and a half. Without any stress about it, I just eat the way I eat. I prioritize certain choices, but I have access to discipline. I used to envy and a bit, like, make fun of people who had discipline. You know what I mean? Like, mm. David Goggins, I'd be like, that guy's fucking crazy. No.
Yeah, but that's a
there
totally.
There is some truth to that.
That's a totally crazy version of discipline.
Totally, but yeah. It was like, I envied so much his extreme discipline, which I would imagine is sourced somewhat from trauma.
Yeah.
Like a lot of endurance athletes and Ironman triathletes and all that kind of stuff. Because, like, what are you trying to endure?
Yeah.
Well, with all that said, my judgment came from also envy. Because I didn't have, I was like the over-consumer of everything. Like, give me alcohol, love it. Give me, you know, mushrooms, love it. Give me weed. I didn't do it a lot, but when I did weed, I really liked to go to outer space. What do you think about?
Well, It sounded to me like you were having a proving ground for being a father. Yeah. Because if you tell your son something when he can actually absorb it, right now he's probably just like, you know, shitting himself and going to sleep whenever he gets breastfed. But later on, it was making you, all these experiences were making you a forged father, because the worst thing we could ever do to our children is to say one thing and do another.
Yeah.
Or to establish a boundary and then not enforce that boundary, which is essentially what it sounds like you were learning with Kai. And then that's why there was the breakup and reconnection.
Yeah.
So it's like, in order for us to be really strong parents, you were essentially, I am essentially, we're all essentially parenting ourselves. And yes, we've heard of this concept before, like parent yourself, reparent yourself. But it's really challenging. And it's actually easier to just eat Cheetos and binge on Netflix. It's much easier to do that.
And they make healthy Cheetos now.
They make healthy Cheetos and, you know, Netflix just keeps playing. You never have to stop it. So like, if we don't realize that we're a physical being, and this is why in our community, I teach this pentagon, which is the physical is at the bottom. So like on the screen, imagine if there's a pentagon. The pentagon is the physical on the bottom, the mental, emotional on the sides, and the spiritual and financial is the roof. These are the five ways that we must master on earth. If we are lacking in one of them, it's going to pull chi, it's going to pull energy from another part.
Yeah.
So like, for example, if you're stressed about money, you're going to be mentally taxed. If you're physically unwell, pounding mushrooms and Cheetos, you're not going to be able to be emotionally a conduit that can let energy pass through it. It's not going to happen. So I think these five things, the reason why I'm drawn to them, and I got to give credit to my mentor, Paul Check. I mean, he taught me about the quadrant, which was everything I said minus the financial. But the financial wound was really big for me because I was like, wow, without finance, I really can't feed any of it. I can't feed
There's a nervous system aspect to money for sure.
There absolutely, and there's a belief, which I know you've gone deep into, especially Jen Sincero, right? You're a badass at making money.
Oh, she's so good.
Read her
book. That book is so funny.
Read that book like 3 times, listened to it on audio, walking around nature. But what I'm saying, what I'm getting at is like, everything that you went through in relationship was preparing you to be a father, and same for me. I'm being forged right now. I mean, my abandonment wounds that we already talked about have come through really like, you want to talk about sympathetic dominance. When Carrie Michelle behaves in a way that reminds me of my father, I have a sympathetic lock. It's almost like a bike lock in my system. And so if I'm not careful from that place, there can be some really severe damage, like things that I say that I can't take back. And so like, the key to all of this, man, which is essentially what a lot of I learned from you, this word liberation, which I got to give you credit for, to be liberated is actually to be able to regulate oneself in any situation and to be able to say no to anything that doesn't resonate with your soul.
Yeah.
That's liberation.
Man, that's the hardest work too.
If I'm liberated, I'm not a slave to my mind, I'm not a slave to my nervous system, I'm not a slave to society, I'm not a slave to Instagram, I'm not a fucking slave if I'm free, if I'm liberated. But it's this constant pruning process of the garden where you realize the weeds have been wrapped around you for a long time. It's going to take some work to take them off. And it doesn't just go to like relationships. I mean, every single thing of those five I talked about, money probably being the biggest one, where people are conditioned that rich people are bad and money doesn't grow on trees, and just this absolute insanity that money has become. I mean, I think about even our house cleaner. You know, I'm like, I feel for her. I'm like, I want to pay her more because I can tell she's suffering. I can tell that people are suffering. And I've really, it took me so long, Mark, to just like crack the code on money, because money is just this medium of exchange that is dependent on how much I feel I'm worth.
Mm.
If I feel I'm worth an amount, when I ask it, it's no problem for somebody to pay it because they trust me, because I believe it.
Right.
But if I don't believe—
the value is inherent in the frequency of the request.
100%. Yeah. If I don't believe I'm worth it, like I had Dan Martell on the podcast. He's like, you'll never earn more than a penny what you feel you're worth. And it's so true. And I think if we can crack the code on this money piece, I mean, really, Mark, you can start anywhere. Start in any of the five.
Yeah.
You're going to get home eventually because one is siphoning energy from the other.
Well, they're all, the pattern will be the same in all of them.
100%.
Right.
100%.
It's like if you're self-abandoning in relationship, you'll self-abandon in, because then the priority of self is gone in all of those, like your fitness, your spiritual health, your physical health, your... You know, it's like a lot of people find, you know, begin the journey of discipline and self through things like food and fitness.
That was my journey.
Right. And then it's like, oh, wait, I got the abs, but and now I got a person, but I still haven't done the deeper work to believe I'm worthy of them. And that's why I think for me, like a lot of it was like I didn't deserve to have, you know, X, Y, or Z. Or it, once I had it, I couldn't hold it because I hadn't held it in other places. You know, it's like I remember saying years ago that you'll always lose something you place your value in to remind you it doesn't live there. So the more worth you put into something, the more it needs to leave you. Mm. And Carolyn Mace, I remember hearing her say a couple months ago, I was listening to a audiobook of hers. And she was saying, like, if you were afraid of being abandoned and I was your angel, I'd have you fall madly in love and then I'd have the person leave you.
Ha.
To remind you.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that wound is fucking a painful one to experience. But till confronted, as you said, it just becomes the repeated pattern of our lives. And then we go, what is it, Carl Jung, who says that, like, until you make the unconscious conscious, you'll you know, keep reliving the same experiences and call it fate.
It'll rule your life.
Yeah, and you'll call
it
fate.
And you'll call it fate.
Yeah, which is like, in a way, it is fate. Because it's like, it's going to keep bringing you to the same fucking complaint.
It's self-created fate. It's not actually organic, godlike creator fate. It's self-induced projective fate.
That's required because it's the education. You know, Alan Watts, where he says, like, it's Ram Dass, where he says, like, you're here. You might as well take the curriculum. Like, you're at school.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when he started to awaken, he said that he would look at the planet and he'd be like, why am I here? Like, I'm awakened. And his teacher was like, you're in school. Take the curriculum.
Like, no doubt.
Like, why are you trying to leave?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, have you ever heard that premise that if you, like, commit suicide or, like, don't accept all your missions, then you got to come back and have another lifetime?
Sure, sure.
So I thought about that a lot when I was in, like, a dark place where, because, you know, like, ultimately when you're considering something like taking your life, it's because being alive is not better than being not alive.
Sure.
Right? Like, that's the exchange. Yeah. And the misconception being that, and Peter Krohn talked about this, I really liked how he reframed this. You're confusing that a part of you needs to die from the whole of you needs to die. And I was like, oh, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'd say during the height of the COVID fuckery, there was still that, like, this planet's not great. Like, there's a lot of fuckery happening here. And I was like, do all the curriculum. Like, don't leave. Like, eat it all or you got to come back to this fuckery. And eat everything on your plate. Do every assignment. And that's always been, like, what has had me roll up my sleeves when I'm, like, want to tap out and not, or, like, go back to drinking or go back to a habit or a ritual that's unhealthy. That's a coping strategy rather than an expanding strategy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think sometimes people, they lose track of when they get in those super deep fucking dark holes like you're talking about. They lose track of what life is about. Life, a life just devoted to one's own selfish pursuits is a pretty fucking hollow life.
Yeah.
So if it's just my story, my show, my thing, my pain, my trauma, my everything, the way is to be of service to others. But then, of course, within that, it's a paradox. If all I'm doing is being of service to others to try to get myself out of despair, right? One of my favorite, I don't like Schwarzenegger anymore because he was a total weirdo during the pandemic, but one of the best things he ever said that talked about Hawkins scale was in The Terminator. He goes, anger is more powerful than despair. And it's true. That's like good. when you're at the bottom of the scale, despair, shame, and guilt vibrate at like 20 to 60 hertz. I mean, it's like the lowest frequency you can ever be in. So you have to actually go to anger before you can get to acceptance and courage to change. It's just impossible not to. And I think when
you have to go through the
steps. You have to go through it, man.
Yeah.
The only way out is through. It's a total soliloquy and a platitude that we see, but it's fucking true. The only way out is through. So how do we go through? You have to go and be willing to actually feel all of these rungs of the ladder, as crunchy and bloody as they are. And I think what happens to us is we slip into this loop of like, well, I'm in this never-ending cycle of feeling grief and shame and guilt. I haven't actually felt my anger yet because that's super scary. So I'm just going to make it about me. Suicide and being in the depths of hell for an extended period of time is not something that I'm trying to make light of,
or
have disrespect for. But at its core, it is a selfish act. It's a selfish act because I can't even imagine what would have to register in someone's consciousness and how low and beaten down they'd have to feel that would be an option. It would be an option to leave the planet, especially if they have children or people that depend on them.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills, I want to learn how to create epic love, I want to heal from a breakup, I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with, well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain, is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away.
So I think for people in those spaces, what has to come to terms, which is a prayer that I just said this yesterday in AMA, and like I've been saying it so much lately. I just close my eyes when I'm in the sauna space or when I'm having a really hard time, and I just ask God. It doesn't have to be God. It can be creator or just whatever you pray to. And just, you know, God, what is it that I most need to learn? And how can I be most humble to learn it? Mm. And I just say that over and over and over again. And eventually my unconscious pops up something. Mm. Go talk to this person, do this thing. It's like, that's the real work. But being open to your unconscious, AKA God, because I think God speaks to us through the unconscious. In order to be open to that, you have to actually be willing to look at whatever comes up. And that can be so scary. And then that's where nervous system work comes in. Because if I have such a hypervigilant nervous system, there's no way I could even receive what God or my unconscious is trying to say. It would just be perceived as a threat. So like the intricacies here are really big, because it's not that you have to sit and pray. You don't have to like find peace in a church. You don't have to go to an ayahuasca ceremony. You don't have to do these things. But you must, and there's no way out of it from what I've lived in 44 years. There's no way out of it other than finally sitting with yourself and just being with your pain and just asking, like, what are you here to teach me?
Yeah, what are you actually here to teach me? Because then you hear, and then you might not like what you hear, right? But it's like Carolyn Mace says, like, you ask for a message from God, then you get it, you don't like it, so you pretend you didn't hear it.
Or you go to the next Tony Robbins event.
Yeah. And you get addicted to the doing, but not the becoming.
That's it.
And one thing I think is fascinating about, I mean, you said a lot of really interesting things. The one about when we like make the reflection of like the prayer I would say, and I still do when I don't know what to do, is show me the way, I'll walk it. Mm. And just like, just show me the next step. And I remember when I did ayahuasca, I remember thinking like, show me the path. And the medicine was like, we did. You're not doing it. You want more answers? Fucking eat, do everything we already told you. Like, yeah. You're trying to get more? Fuck you. You're not getting more. Like, you're not even doing the things we said. So I was like, bow. Let me go shit my pants for a second. I'll come back. But it was a deep experience of recognition that I was like, oh, I want more because I want to be out. I want to leave the cocoon. I want to be done. But the transformation's not complete. And it's like this idea that you leave the you're still cooking, you're still marinating, and you want to leave early. It's like, imagine if the caterpillar leaves the cocoon early, fucked up. You're not doing shit. You got half a wing, your ass isn't formed yet, you know, like you got a melted ass, you're still goo, half goo. It's like the same thing. It's like we want to leave that experience. And I think because we live in a culture, and Frances Weller talks about this, like we live in this ascension culture of like love and light, rise and blah, 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 the hero's journey.
Oh, I'm so glad we're talking about this.
Yeah, and he's like, it's about, what about the descent? Like he talks about how like you develop, oh, I love it. You develop a different form of sight, the ability to see in the dark, a different set of eyes. And I get emotional thinking about it because it's like when I finally developed the ability to stay in the heaviness, to recognize the value of the grief. One thing I'll say, when you're in that real deep part, that's where community is so important, because you might think you'll get swallowed by the darkness, but if you have a friend who's just sitting beside you that doesn't even need to talk to you, but you put your hand out and they go, I got you. Like, do you need to come out for a bit? Like, have a talk, you know, find some levity, watch Seinfeld or whatever. Like, let's go, but go back. Like, I got you. And that was important for me in the darkest times, was just like having an option. And, you know, it's like we think the ultimate achievement is to get
a million followers, but the most important question you'll ever ask yourself is, do you have someone to call at 2 a.m.? That answer will be more determinant of your health than how many followers you have, how many likes you get. But the thing you said about when you're in the basement and you're in the despair and you're in the darkness, there's a learned helplessness, right? It's like the research that Martin Seligman used to do before he created positive psychology was actually on learned helplessness. And learned helplessness, like the studies looked at like shocking a dog when the dog went in a room and the dog would eventually just give up and lay down. And they actually, unfortunately, used a lot of that research to learn how to torture humans. And so he created positive psychology, like how do humans thrive? Why do they thrive? What's the science of that? But what's really interesting is that there's that saying that the opposite of trauma is choice. And so like really when you're in learned helplessness and you get to this place of despair, there's a belief you can't do anything. You can't change anything. You can't. And that's why that access to a, no, I won't touch alcohol anymore. No, I won't, you know, be addicted to porn. No, I won't stay in the toxic relationship. Yes, I'll make my bed. Yes, I'll do a 10-second cold shower. Yes, I'll, any one of those micro choices or macro, because those other ones are huge, leads when you're in the despair, you go, oh, I got here. I can leave here. And when you get there, you don't know you can leave there. And that's why you have to get there. Mm-hmm. Because then when you rise from that and you see these people who have made ultimate changes in their life, they do it because they've done it. And now they can be like I think of Eric Thomas, the hip hop preacher. Do you know his work? Fuck, he's so great.
Yeah.
Because he comes from nothing. And the guy is, I would argue, probably the best speaker. Motivational speaker I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like to every socioeconomic group, to every, like it doesn't matter where you come from, he would light something in you, you know? And that's why I was like, you were saying like the, when someone's lived it, it's different. Like when you've been in the breakup in the, and you've walked it, it's very different than I read this book on CBT.
Oh, of course.
You know, cognitive behavioral therapy, and let me ask you all the questions. Instead, it's like, I know the path. I fucking walked it. Like, let me ask you the questions so you can come to the awareness of the path you're going to walk. Don't subcontract the authority to me. You're going to decide. And, like, stop trying to make me your parent. Stop trying to, like, you're the parent. And that's, like, the, that's why I think the work within self is so important, because if you don't do it, you can't be in the company of it. You can't teach it. You can't, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, you can, but it's just not embodied.
Yeah. But when you hit the bottom, like true rock bottom.
Yeah.
There is no more down.
Yeah.
The only,
you way, don't want to find them. There's no further.
So it's like another platitude. Rock bottom is a gift. Rock bottom, you come up from rock bottom, right. But depending on, this is actually an interesting paradox. Depending on how hard you hit the bottom and how much pain you go through, and just a multitude of like maybe your dharma and generational, so many factors play into this, right? Like your come up from the bottom. The come up from the bottom can be so challenging that one might become a yoga instructor, a massage therapist, a personal trainer, a coach, a podcaster, as a way in which to just spend their time shining light on others. But then guess what? If they're holding a flashlight and they're just shining it on others, there's this space between them and the light that stays dark.
Yeah.
They never actually illuminate their own stuff because that pain or that experience was so traumatic, or maybe they even haven't hit rock bottom yet.
Yeah.
And they're still doing this kind of pacification of self where they're not actually being of service to self. They're just using this veil to be of service to others. I say, fuck that. I think what we are called forth to do, especially now, is to hold up a lantern. Like leaders hold lanterns. You and I like you especially, like if I hold up a lantern, and I talk about my real lessons, unfiltered, uncensored, no bullshit, not because my ego wants the attention, but because it's real pain and I think it's of service, then I'm really illuminating myself. That's a leader. A leader holds up a lantern. A leader doesn't just shine a flashlight, because that was me as a personal trainer, just making other people healthy, meanwhile dealing with my own addictions and not actually illuminating myself. So I think like what you're describing is so important, because God, when you get down there, coming back up can be so liberating. And on the way up is still part of the hero's journey. There's still jackals in the forest. There's still stuff that's going to come feed your ego to where it can still hide. Even on the come up, even right. on the come up from the bottom, your ego can still hide. And so it's not to say that this is going to happen to everyone, because it doesn't have to, but it definitely happened to me, man. I mean, when I was a personal trainer, and even when I started the podcast, I was just like shining as much light as I could. I think at one point I look back on myself. We were saying like, if you were to judge your past self, we would all fail. Like yeah. When I started the podcast, I would say things like good vibes only. I was one of those people. I'm here.
My wife jokes about that.
I'm here.
She had like a picture or a meme on her page.
I think I even brought that up to her.
Yeah.
On the podcast.
She had like a good vibes.
Good vibes only. But see, the danger in that is like, and it's not to take away from someone's experience. Like, hey, however you hit bottom and you come up, beautiful. Because at least you're coming up. At least you're not choosing to this learn helplessness.
Right.
But when you come up, there's still things to be aware of, like the AI that's trained on Instagram. So if you're going through a breakup, it's just going to validate all your shit. The AI trains what kind of content you see. So it's just going to validate all the things within you that really get to stay dark. You know what I mean? Like you'll just get fed the content that's just going to feed your ego. So we have to be really careful of this. And then you could wind up going to a breathwork journey and being like, I'm going to be a breathwork facilitator. But you never actually hold the lantern up. You're not a real leader because you're just shining light on other people. A leader is not somebody that just illuminates the path for others. A leader is somebody that is honest about where they're stuck and is honest about sharing their stuff. That's a trustworthy leader, in my opinion. That's why leaders hold lanterns.
I like
how could
saying.
We not?
Yeah, I like that saying. I think of like the most transformative bosses I ever had when I was in corporate world were humble, kind. Like there's a boss I had in my second job. My first job, he was incredible too. The first guy who ever trusted me.
What was your first job?
I was a rep at a pharmaceutical.
Oh yeah, pharma. You're in the
my first ever job was working at like the Best Buy of Canada, which I loved. It was great. I was selling electronics, extended warranties. I was everyone's nightmare when you went into an electronics store. I was in a suit. It was like the 40-year-old virgin. It was great. But, Kelly Clarkson. But if you get it, you get it. But my first manager who ever trusted me was incredible, and I did a mat leave for that job. And then my second job, that manager, incredible guy. His name is Mike McLean. He is still incredible. And I've reflected back to him, like, I didn't know how powerful this lesson would be for me. But one of the first things the other boss taught me was when I was nervous in my first time of work, he said, I love that you're nervous because it means that you care.
Yeah.
And it totally reframed nervousness for me. And then, like, that has transcended my speaking career, my job as a podcaster, everything, because I just saw that when I didn't know it was, and that imposter syndrome was really expansion syndrome, you know? And Mike McLean said to me, my job as your boss is to make you my boss. And so he had such humility. Like he was such a resource of immeasurable wisdom. But the humility was like, he wasn't afraid of me becoming better than him. He wanted me to. Because it was evidence that he had brought me to where he was and was elevating me. And I didn't realize how powerful that was, but he was such a lantern for me. And every night, like when we went out on meetings, you know, when everyone would get together for like a national meeting or whatever, which like farm reps loved to party, he would always go to bed early. And he'd be like, see you guys. He had such good boundaries. And I would be like, come on, just come out for like a beer or whatever. And he was like, no, have a good time. And I was like, man, like he modeled a behavior that I would eventually have.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, yeah, he had good boundaries with us as employees. He had a space of like where was the boss and the employee. And it was really like I look back and it's like he had a lantern. Mm. I never thought about that, but it's such a great metaphor because there's a light that's still coming back.
Yeah, I found myself.
It's interesting.
It's so interesting because it's a sticky trap to just make your life being of service to others because it, truly, if you're not careful, you can bypass the healing that's wanting to be healed. I mean, it's a real thing. I'm sure you've seen this, right? Like people that are just, oh, I'm of service to everyone else. I'm of service to everyone else. But they're still going to their 45th ayahuasca ceremony. It's like, you know, they're, if you have to go to that many ceremonies and if you have to go to Tony Robbins.
The medicine's like, stop coming.
The medicine will smack you. It'll say what it said to you. We've already told you what to do. So I guess what I'm really getting at is I've lived this myself. Like I've been that person that was like, I'm going to make my life. Back in the day, my podcast was called Wellness Force, which I changed the name because the word force, I don't like the etymology or the meaning of the word force. It's just not my thing.
Oh, that's interesting. That's smart. Because you read David Hawkins' work and you're like, power versus force.
That was actually a huge part of it, by the
way. Was that it?
Yeah, good intuition. Yeah,
I figured.
That was a huge part of it. And I was like, God, I just don't like the word, the feeling of forcefulness.
When you say it, yeah, I get it.
Force. It's like, well, yeah, you could tap into it, but
a force to be reckoned with. But then there's like the frequency of the word.
It's a combative word.
Yeah.
So I replaced that with wisdom, which is ultimately what I'm seeking, right? So, so wellness and wisdom is this amalgamation of my own life experience, sharing authentically by holding up a lantern, and wanting to be a leader to my family, my business, and myself, so I can trust myself, right?
Right.
If I can trust myself, you talked about being ambivalent with Kylie, where you're like accusing her of things, and you even told me on the phone once, you're like, actually, no, I was being ambivalent because I stayed.
Yeah.
So that was you as a friend sharing with me as a leader, your own, you're holding up a lantern the whole time. You weren't just like, oh, I'm going to be of service to Josh. You're sharing, and this is what you do on your podcast. This is what I make the most valiant attempt to do is, God, can I just share something real today? Like when I do the AMAs with Mar, my content manager, I'm like, let's do no prep. I just want to talk about whatever's real in this moment for me. Oh shit, I'm going to talk about my relationship. You know, like I'm going to air out my stuff. Not because I need my ego to be fed from the audience. And it's, oh, poor Josh. No, it's like, I'm actually learning in real time here. I'm learning how to regulate myself. I'm learning what liberation actually is because, God, dude, we're all worth that. You know, we're attracted to liberated beings. I think of that guy Muji. I don't know if you've seen his work on YouTube, just a total master. And he's like, really, the pathway to liberation isn't about disassociation or disconnecting from yourself. The pathway to liberation is actually to be present in each moment without judgment or trying to get out of the moment. And it's so simple. It's like
Eckhart had it, man.
It's like, yeah, we get it. And how do we do that? You know, how do we actually practically do that?
I listen to Eckhart Tolle. I haven't listened to him in a while, but like now I look back and I'm like, that guy fucking definitely has it.
He's
like,
got it. His voice puts me to bed.
Yeah.
But he's got it. He's got it.
Yeah. Your Bane body.
He talks very interesting.
But he's like funny too.
He's cool.
Like when you listen to him talk, he's like actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
But I now I'm like, when I remember listening to, what's like one of his most famous books? That's
Power
one with
of
a
Now?
Tree on it. Yeah,
Power of Now?
I think it's Power of Now.
Yeah.
But I remember listening to it hiking and being like, whoa. But there was a part, I remember when Kylie and I were first dating, she was super into Eckhart, and she was like coming out of a divorce. So I remember she said something to me like, emotions aren't real. And I was like,
nope.
And so I was like, let's talk about that. Yeah. And now we joke about it. But back then I remember being like, that is like, there's such an essential, you can't get to emotions aren't real before you get through emotions and the value of them. You know, not that they're not real because they're valuable in their experience, but that they aren't going to determine the circumstances of your life. Because, you know, the other day I got an email. I woke up at 7:30 in the morning. I checked my email. I was playing with Jasper, went to my phone for the first time.
Big mistake.
You know, I was done. I was like off to work.
Oh, okay.
So I like pick up my phone, check my email. My email, first one says, I have like 6 emails from my bank. First one says, we've locked out your account because of too many attempts. I was like, well, I didn't attempt anything. Next one, we've opened your account at your request. Ah, I didn't do that. Next one. Four warnings, all my account balances are below the threshold. I was like, did I just get Ocean'd 11 or whatever? Is that a verb? Whatever.
I think it is.
But I was like, did someone just zero all my accounts? Now, granted, no one could wire all your money without your approval, without going into a branch, putting on a mustache, being Mark, you know, like glasses, although I don't have a mustache, but you know what I mean? But I was totally dysregulated for like, you know, when you get like panicky, I'm trying to call them, I'm punching the wrong number.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, hold the phone. Like, take a deep breath. And I was like, okay, dial the number. Like, your money's gone or it's there, but you can't change it.
Yeah.
Like, we'll deal with it. You can make more money. You can, you know, meanwhile, my lizard brain is like, no, you can't. You're fucked. Yeah. Everything's done. You're going to live with your in-laws forever, you know? But I finally get a hold of them and nothing's happened. It's just automated emails. I'm like, those are the worst automated emails in a row. They had closed my account out from freezing, but from people trying to get in. But like, I was like, you need to change the order of those. Those are the most dysregulating. Anyways, I say that story because I'm like, even knowing all the tools, I was like in trigger land. And I just looked back at it and I was like, what another opportunity to like learn how to not make something mean something, to be in the moment. I think of what you said about being with a child. It's like, man, one of the worst things you could do is be on your phone with your kid. Mm-hmm. And yet I could feel the pull to check something. I could feel it. But it's like, am I going to go do it? Am I going to keep my phone with me with my child? And it's like, there's obviously human times when you got to work and do stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, it's like that level of, we've never been in a time in human history with so many pulls to presence. Like there's never been more reasons to not be here. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How do you manage all that?
This is what I mentioned with the AI and the algorithm. So like, my team and I use ChatGPT. We use like some of the other tools. But I tell them and I tell myself, like, let's be cautious and make sure that we're always the master of this.
Yeah.
Because what I mentioned earlier is so true. And y'all can look this up as long as the AI doesn't want you to see it. Maybe you won't be able to find it. But look up the way that the AI algorithm in social media trains us to validate our stuckness. That's a really, really big question. And the answer is that it tracks eye movement. It tracks usage.
Oh, it tracks eye movement?
It tracks time. The camera tracks your eye movement.
I didn't know that.
The microphone listens to your conversations. We all opt into this with Facebook and Meta.
We definitely know that.
So like case in point, right? When you got triggered, that was just something that was brand new. You hadn't experienced that maybe ever, or if you did, it's been a long time. It was just an experience for you to either fall and succumb to it or for you to transcend.
I hadn't experienced that level of dysregulation.
Which you did. You eventually course corrected. But look at the amount of work you've done, right? And even the people in your audience, like they're obviously doing some or the work. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So even for people that are on a spiritual path, that are learning about their nervous system, that are actually going deep into who and why and what they are, they're still human. They still have a meat radio. They still have a neural tree, right? Yeah. And they still have a neurology that's prone to sympathetic dominance in moments of high stress or tension. So what I'm saying is like, we have to be mindful in this new age because AI is going to continue to get smarter. It's not me saying this because we need to be afraid.
Right.
Instead, I would just replace fear with greater awareness. Mm. Like we don't need to be in fear. But the greater awareness that's being called forth is, as AI continues to accelerate, and you want to talk about a hockey stick, Mark, it's a fucking hockey stick. Have you seen how fast AI is learning about us right now? Y'all get to be so dedicated to your spiritual practice, your nervous system regulation practice, because in this bubble or in this lens, like your event is about liberation, right? Mm-hmm. That I'm going to speak at tomorrow and that you have 100 plus people coming. It's like everyone there is hungry for liberation because they all feel what it's like when they don't have it. We're all in this age where we are essentially being harvested, almost like a parasite has harvested our chi, 100%. Harvested our energy. And you know, the thing with a parasite is it only can function in a way where you don't know it's there.
Mm.
But if you know the parasite's there, then we don't have to be at war with Meta. We don't have to be at war with anything. We can actually just become more aware about our habits, more aware about how we feel. I disagree with Kylie. I think emotions are real. And then I think they're just guideposts, right?
Like she was like 26 when that's fine. She said that.
It's all good, Kylie. No.
She's
no
evolved.
Hate.
She's
no
evolved.
Hate. Yeah, I was going to say that's different than what was in Liberated Love.
Like
That was not.
That was when I first
emotions
met her.
In Liberated Love were real.
Yeah.
So anyways, what I'm getting at is like there's a call for even greater expansion. And this isn't esoteric language. It's like we can either go to this path of fear or we can go to this path of awareness, which is love. But what makes us choose? What makes us choose love versus what makes us choose learned helplessness and victimhood and fear? I think it really comes down to what do you desire? What do you want? What kind of life do you want? What kind of experience do you want on earth? Like what do you want to create? What do you want to be? What do you want to become? Like that's got to be a fire.
It's got to be.
That you stoke on a regular basis. Because I think people, I was on a stage with Sean Wells, and with Luke and with Ben Greenfield, and Daniel's question was, what is a hack? What's like the number one biohack that nobody knows about? And I was like, okay, well, the number one biohack that makes you less monetizable less parasitic driven is actually to be in your purpose.
Mm.
Because when you're in your purpose and you dedicate yourself to learning all the layers of your purpose and moving through the old version of you and creating this new version of you and really stepping into your purpose. I remember on the phone once you told me, you were like, yeah, am I going to stay in this relationship and sell my purpose out? Fuck no, I would never sell out my purpose. And it's like, there's power in that. There's power in never selling out your purpose, especially as a man. I mean, a man will crawl through broken glass naked for his purpose. Like, there's nothing for a really purpose-driven man that could ever take him away from that, even a woman.
Ideally.
Even a
woman.
But
if he is pulled away by a woman, the woman won't trust him.
The woman will, her body will never actually respect him. She'll never actually be into him
at
all.
Which is such a strange
irony. Such a paradox.
Because the codependent people pleaser in me was for sure like, oh, you're the most important thing in my life. And I remember reading The Way of the Superior Man, which I think is a great gateway to understanding some of these things. Yeah, where I was like, she wants to be the most important person in your life, not the most important thing.
That's right.
And I was like, ah.
That's it. So if we're
that was such a great lesson.
And this goes.
Wish I read it when I was 16.
Man, if somebody would have given me that when I was 16,
that's like way better than
you imagine.
That's way better than the game.
The game
that was the game. That is the game.
But then he came out with The Truth,
which is such a good book.
Which was his repair for the game.
How good is The Truth?
The Truth was a great book.
It's so good. Everybody, it's one of the best relationship books I've ever read.
It's incredible. He is absolutely incredible.
He's such a great narrator.
Insane.
And like storytelling and lesson integration of lesson. I actually got the exercise of the timeline exercise from that book. Do you know the timeline exercise?
I forgot it. It's been a long time since.
So you write out like your whole story of your life.
Yes.
And so I added to it. So you write out the story of your life and like all the memorable moments. And so I made it so you write out all the stickiest moments. You write out, then there's, and you might as well do this, listener, watcher.
Yeah.
You write out all the stickiest moments of your life. And then in one column, you write out the belief it created. Like what you made it mean about you and what you made it mean about love and relationships. And you like really get to the grit of it. And then you write, what is the wisdom in the experience? Like, what is it asking you to learn and what skill would you need to create and who would you need to become?
Yeah.
And then you tear off what happened and the belief and you burn it and you keep the wisdom.
That reminds me in a way of Gabor Mate's Compassionate Inquiry. It's similar. And
well,
I'm
I don't
sure.
Know it, but I love Gabor.
Well, I mean, and I think he pulled that from nonviolent communication, you know, the jackal and the giraffe, like the giraffe sticks their neck out. But even what you're talking about with the inventory of like, hey, here's what happened. Here's what I'm cleaving from it. Here's something good. The only way you do that is if you had a purpose to do it for, which goes back to my earlier statement.
It's purpose like, for me changed everything.
Purpose.
It's like when I was like, I'm going to teach love and relationships. All of a sudden I had to get into integrity.
Bro, can you imagine if you would have stayed being a pharma rep and not created,
I'd have been fucking
create the love. Your soul would have died.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
You would have been monetizable. You
would have
probably
been selling the mRNA vaccine.
Some lady with one leg who was a trucker. Who knows? Like, who knows what would have happened? So you are an embodiment, and anybody that's creating something in a world, and I feel like I am too. Like, we are, and not from an egoic place. I'm not saying, like, look how cool we are. I'm just saying, like, hey, this is the blood, sweat, and the tears to actually earn the right to chase your purpose and to go down the road for your purpose. Because you are
all
less,
the path there.
You are less monetizable. You are less weaponizable, if that's a word.
Yeah, you're less easily captured by an ideology.
You're less captured by ideology. You think for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Republican or Democrat.
Right.
You don't have to be pro or against. You can let go of this bifurcated bullshit illusionary game where it's like it's us versus them. What a bullshit game this
it's
is.
It's such bullshit.
It's and such
it's like,
bullshit.
You all of a sudden are like, oh, I can't believe I kicked my aunt out of the family because she voted for blah, blah, blah. It's like, who gives a fuck? It doesn't matter. Like, get your aunt back. It's probably an uncle who you got rid of, but them back.
I will say, though, that many of the people that got it in the arm, if you know what I mean, I'll be careful for the censorship gods.
Yeah.
I believe that they were, not all of them, but if you were to do like an emotional profile of the people that took it in the arm, they probably were less on the path of their purpose than those that didn't. I'm making a generalization here. Obviously, there's outliers. It may not be 100%.
People who had to do it for work.
But say we put it on a graph. I would guess that the far majority of people that fall to ideology or fall to outsourcing their medical autonomy or just their autonomy in any way were the ones that didn't have a purpose or they weren't happy in their life already. They were already in some kind of fear programming. And that fear programming kicked in to when, oh, well, this is my way out of fear. This is my path to peace. This is what's going to give me safety, even though we all knew it was pseudo safety.
I would agree with you. I think the mechanism of the lever, maybe the gateway of manipulation, is the trust in an authority that we've all been taught to trust our whole lives, programmed at school. And so it's like all of the dissonance that gets created when you realize that the food industry is lying to you, that the public health often lies to you, not always. You know, so you start to see that all these things that you've been taught your whole life, like follow these rules, eat the food pyramid, you'll be fine. Oh, yeah, fuck that. Eat the food pyramid and you'll have, guess what everyone has? Type 2 diabetes, type 3 now, dementia. So it's like, in order to wake up, it's like we all need to experience the corruption of our own sovereignty and choice to be able to find out that we gave it away, you know? And I agree there's a gateway that leads to that. And now I have so much compassion for all of it because I'm like, the person who didn't get invited to Thanksgiving because they didn't get the thing in the arm, the person who didn't invite them or remove the invite is as dehumanized as the person who didn't get invited. And for me, I have so much compassion for that now because I'm like, we could focus on that or we could be like, oh, let's just have dinner again. I have a friend who's like very centrist about everything. And I was talking about like a pro-anti ideology that fascinates me. And he said, just break bread with those people and you'll have a totally different perspective. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's so true. Because when you break bread with people, you're like, oh, well, there's like space for diverse thought. But we've been taught to get rid of that.
I think it because our brain is actually designed to be in a tribe that's trusted because back in the day, we've only changed maybe a half of 1%. This piece in our brain, Jason Silva talks about this in Brain Games.
Yeah.
There's literally neurology that's baked into our ancient stem. If we are ostracized from the tribe, we could die.
Right.
You could literally, like literally
you would die.
In your nervous system, it's transcribed as death if you're not part of a tribe. So there's this illusionary bifurcation thing I was talking about where you pick one side and then that gives you safety. But fuck that. It's all pseudo safety. None of it's actually real. The only way you can be safe is if you make the best choices based on the consciousness you have in any given moment and you just lead with your fucking heart and you just go for it. That's the only way you're free.
And to capture your heart back when you're willing to sell your shit out to maintain group membership based on fear and that, you know what I mean? Like the lever of fear that says, if you don't do this, you're not a good person, you're a grandma killer, you're this, you're that. It's like you have to get captured by that to recognize you sell your integrity out to then be like, but that's the part is like, you have to meet the humility to come back. You know, you have to be able to say like, oh, I was captured by an ideology. I have been, I remember listening to Sense Making, the podcast with Daniel Schmachtenberger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they said, if you're ever enraged, you're enrolled. And I was like, by an ideology or, and I was like, wow, who hasn't been? Cause I have been, you know, where I'm like, oh, I remember hearing that and being like, oh, ooh, I'm currently enraged and, oh, how does it serve? You talked about David Hawkins' work and then I remember listening to The Art of Letting Go. I think it's called one of his books.
Yeah. I think it's just Letting Go.
Someone recommended it to me. Mm-hmm. And it was so profound. Like I needed exactly the way the words were ordered and how it was written to be able to recognize that like you can actually change your whole experience with other people purely by removing the force that you're putting against the relationship. Like you're talking about with your father.
100%.
You know, and I think a lot about like, yeah, but then who am I without the wound? You know, then I have to be without a wound. If I don't have a wound, how do I find my motivation, right? And so it's like I then have to step into wholeness, and so then my motivation comes from expansion instead of repair. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because for me, hypervigilance trained nervous system has only really felt alive when it's in fight or flight.
Yeah.
And so if the relationship is up and down, well, then that's normal and that's safe. It's like a familiarity thing instead of just like, oh, actually a loving, peaceful relationship could actually sometimes feel boring. Which is amazing.
Totally.
It's supposed to.
Who knew that it would be love?
That's why there's a house with a couple that's been married. Your parents are celebrating their 50th, right?
Yeah.
So they've probably got like a grandfather clock in their room that's older than them, and that clock ding-dongs the same time every day. It's like, well, that's sometimes the greatest relationship in the world.
Right.
Is the one where the clock ding-dongs the same every day. It's dependability. It's like this trustworthiness where you can...
Reliability.
Yeah, you can just be yourself with that person. There doesn't have to be this viscosity up and down, like light, dark, back and forth. You know, it's absolutely insane what I've been through, but also I had to go through it to learn that, like, wow, in my relationship and just even in my way of being, I don't have to have these super highs and lows.
Right.
And the wisdom, you know, you talked about that wisdom list that you made.
Yeah.
The wisdom from this that was connected, that it just hit me so hard. I saw my mom. She had her 75th birthday in Tennessee. Mm. And I noticed my mom. I would just watch her because she's been manic bipolar for ever since I was a child. And she goes through these highs and lows. And I was like, oh, it clicked this trip where I said, oh, not only was that a learned behavior where when my mom's moods were going up and down, that's what felt normal, I would attract partners in that would mirror that same thing to me because then I could fix them.
Mm.
And it even is what brought me to Carrie Michelle in the beginning. And so there's been this unraveling of like, there's nothing to fix with her. She doesn't need my fixing. What she needs is my love and compassion and for me to not have a roller coaster going on inside of me that I learned from my mom.
Like you create the roller coaster to create familiarity, to create a need to be needed. And yeah, which is the participation in the brokenness of someone else to serve the need to fix.
Because I don't know any other way.
Which is what same pattern.
And another way, thank you. I'm just going to spend this podcast thanking you, okay? another person that you introduced me to that came on the pod a couple of times was Mark Wolin.
Oh,
and when we had a couple session with Mark, he used his intuition, he used his skills. I mean, he's honestly probably one of the best therapists I've ever talked to. He's so good at what he does.
He's
so good.
He's like operating in other dimensions.
He's out there.
He's like 70.
He's floating around in a carpet, dude, looking down on us with like peeking his sunglasses out.
And he's genuinely one of the kindest people ever.
He's amazing. And so he said, like, you know, Carrie, the rug is always being felt like it's going to be pulled from under you. Does that feel true? And she broke down in tears. And he's like, Josh, your mom was so untrustable that when she was driving a car when you were young and you were strapped to the car, that it felt like you were going to die when she'd go off the cliff. Does that feel real? And I start crying. I mean, the laser focus that he has and like his ability to just like touch the deepest part and just push it, not poke it, but just push it,
yeah,
was so transformative. And we got to record the whole session. And so going back to that and listening to it again to remind me like, oh, this is actually just that wound. And it came so clear in Tennessee because I'm just like, now that I can be there for my mom and I can really experience her, there's so much compassion for the ocean of sadness and grief inside of her.
Mm.
I mean, it's like, I love you, mom, so much. You know, you brought me into the world. You carried me in your body. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And man, if I could take that pain away from you, I would, but it's not my job. It's not what I'm here to do. That's not my responsibility. And I think like snipping that cord with like golden fucking scissors, it's so amazing because I'm not here to fix my mom. I'm not here to fix Carrie Michelle. I'm here to be a liberated, wonderful, powerful father and businessman and podcaster who's holding a lantern. Mm. I want to hold up a lantern. So that's what this whole journey is about for me. Do I have it figured out? Nope. Conversations like this help me figure it out though. And all of us, because we're learning in real time of like, oh, me too. I feel like that sometimes too. What does that mean? Like what curiosity can I follow the thread for when Mark is mentioning something or Josh is mentioning something that'll allow me to uncover why this thing itches so much, why it hurts me so much. And that's being a leader. Like that to me is so, I could spend my whole life doing that.
Right.
I could spend my whole life doing that because, you know, to quote Kelly Brogan, healing is a spiral. There's expansion and contraction over and over and over and over again. And then when we get in our 70s and 80s and 90s, hopefully we live to 100, there's going to be more expansion and contraction. It's like everything that we go through contracted expands us to the next level where we can hold more because there's another bigger contraction coming after that.
Mm.
And that's why it's so amazing. We're so blessed. We're so fucking blessed to be here. And just conversations like this remind me of that blessing. It's just so powerful to be blessed, to have real connection, a real friendship, and actual meaningful sharing instead of just this bullshit of sports on the weekend and drinking and all this distraction that gives us nothing It just feeds the hungry ghost. Shout out to Mate. It just feeds the hungry ghost, but it never actually sustains us. It never actually fulfills us and gives us something of value that we can share with our children, that they can share with their children. That's the kind of life I want to live. So yeah, let's share this podcast with as many people as possible, because gosh, conversations like this can change your world, and then that can eventually change the world.
Amen. Yeah. Where can people find more of your lantern?
All right. Leaders hold lanterns. I was telling Taylor about this before we started recording. I'm like, I literally have never heard anyone say that phrase. And I feel like it's part of my being in the world to just hold up a lantern. And so if you want to illuminate yourself with the lantern, go to the Wellness and Wisdom podcast. You can go to joshtrent.com/podcast, or you can just search Josh Trent on Spotify.
Perfect. We'll put all the links in the show notes, brother. I appreciate you.
Love you, bro.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.